Hello, and welcome to D.S. Johnson Books. Today's episode comes from the book Realms of Eadnacht, The War Wizard. In a time of desperate measures, the queen of the most powerful city in Eadnacht threw the world into a fallen and broken state in an attempt to destroy the most powerful necromancer the world had ever seen. The once magically enhanced world is no more, and the elemental beings that once inhabited it are gone. The only thing strong enough to bring it back is the ancient artifacts of the Severed Aklava, and the only one strong enough to use them is the War Wizard. Eadnacht's only hope is a War Wizard, but none have been born in a millennium until now. Hidden from the Necromancer in a time realm not his own, the future of the world resides in a barely grown man's destiny. The War Wizard's protectors did the best they could to prepare him with the use and teaching of his magic, and Shaz must now quickly learn his true potential and battle the evils of the Shadow Worlds. As a being which holds all the elements and the dreaded shadow magic, Shaz must find the descendants of the ancient magical races and the artifacts before the Necromancer does and the world of Eadnacht's future succumbs to the evil. Prologue. Destruction of Srinivasa. The Rise and Fall of the Necromancer. The End of the Realms. She's sinking the city. Bright white flashes burst from their fingertips, and hues of electric blue shot across the rotunda with a deafening crack. The once impeccable crystal stone cracked like a twig. Half crouched and slightly leaned back, he stretched out his hand and slipped under the downward slash of a long blade already dripping. He leapt into the air and flipped over the concourses of the sky-blue robes of the Commission. Gavin Reel's treacherous needs exempted him from feeling, and his conscience was now void. Eyes bloodshot with fury, he sank into the depths of his insanity. The popping cracks of the fire and ice elements against each other reverberated across the slick floor, tossing him about and jarring him from his thoughts. Dust plumes erupted from the pockets of crumbling walls, and he gripped his shaking head and pled to be released from his harrowing prison. But it was too late. He belonged to the shadow now. The hairs on the back of his neck stood out straight, and a rippling effect crawled up and down his skin. An electrifying bolt of unyielding energy surged past his ear. He flipped his long black hair from his flat gray eyes, which sank deep in the pallid hollow of his face. The pungent odor of singed hair and flesh stifled his nose and wreaked havoc on his focus. Anger and hate surged from his bosom. Sweat dripped onto his sliver-thin black eyebrows and down his face and landed at the corner of his mouth. He glowered over the madness and zeroed in on the door at the end of the mysterious hall and searched for an acceptable route to his destination. He seized his opportunity and flung himself into the air. He rolled over an oncoming deluge of potent magic, but the heat burst his blood-red cloak into flames. Gavin slipped his arms out of his battle robe and twisted away from the engulfing barrage. He rolled into the fall and jumped to his feet and shut the roaring shriek from his ears. The pounding of his heart as he flipped over his spear beat heavily in his head. He thrust his hands out and released his newly acquired powers. Rock fragments pierced the air like speeding razors and struck several of the newly arrived armored men. Cursed with unrelenting pain, it paralyzed them from the inside, and they crumbled to the floor. He dug his toes into the floor and boosted himself with a blast of air, and whizzed past so fast the soldiers spun in their boots.
"Gavin, stop!" Castos yelled.
Castos, the leader of Queen Ambrosia's united forces, stood erect.
"You can't stop me!"
Gavin's voice was high, and his words dripped off his lips like thick syrup. The thought welled up inside his chest like a smoldering flame, and he could taste it, smell it, and see his destiny.
"I have destroyed your beautiful Srinivasa," he said.
Gavin's hissy tone and cynical smile bit at Castos's nerves. Castos's anger surged, and he slammed his long golden twine staff on the ground.
"We will rebuild it. You can't stop goodness. How many people have to die?"
"You're worse off than I thought."
Gavin threw his head back and laughed a humorless, vicious sound. Castos crossed the staff in front of his broad-carved expression and lifted his palm face up, and conjured the elements he controlled. A crackling fire burst into existence and danced on his flesh.
Time to put an end to this senseless bloodshed.
Castos lifted his staff high, and with the fire particles of the universe, he sent the ravaged energy directly at Gavin. Gavin sucked in his belly, pulled in his arms and legs, and transformed into an invisible shriek of air. He rushed over Castos and fed the inferno with life-breathing oxygen. The air pulled the fire back toward Castos and unleashed it onto its master. The fire didn't care what it consumed, simply that it feasted on life's sustenance. Absolute horror hit a split second before Castos was annihilated by his own power. Gavin sailed through the air with exhilarated weightlessness. His thunderous laughter rattled the windows until they shattered and sent glass shards careening to the ground. Gavin Real soared down the long corridors, disarming enchantments along the paths. When he reached the door, he hovered momentarily, then unraveled the misty tendrils of the air element and transformed back into his human form. His skinny, almost malnourished figure emerged. The towering solid wood door was intricately carved with ancient symbols and runes. Gavin's long fingers manipulated the old puzzle, which had taken him over a year to figure out. With the last knot pushed, the door opened with a gasp. A small puff of wind bathed his face with the odor of musky dust, an aroma he quite enjoyed. He heaved the heavy obstacle open and slipped inside. Gavin waved his hand across the smooth, orderly lines on the inside of the door, and several clicks and a few slides of unseen latches echoed against the hollow roundness of the room as it sealed shut. Gavin's bones ached from the cold darkness. His shadow ran across the tiles, and his heart jumped. A lump formed in his throat until he realized it was his shadow and not the shadow. He searched the room and found a large, majestic desk on the other side. Heavy, weaved curtains framed tall windows, and he found a slight beauty in the carved vaults. Every wall was covered top to bottom with shelves of scrolls and books that were so jam-packed they overflowed.
"You must not fail,"
a deep, echoey voice said. The shadow's voice ripped through his mind, and the horrifying image of the shadow sent shivers down his spine. He shook it off and picked up the first parchment on the top of the desk, read the heading, and tossed it on the floor. He picked up another, then another. His intrigue half stopped him, but he knew he only had but a few moments until the council would know where he was. He put his thoughts aside and hastily rummaged through the scrolls and parchments that sat barren and lonely.
"Where is it?" he snarled.
He ravaged the last few particles of writings as the persistent gnawing in his navel grew. With one foul sweep of his arms, he sent the rest flying to the floor. He slammed his fists on the table, his knuckles pure white. A bead of sweat dripped from his drooped head and splashed onto the marble surface. He stared into the backs of his eyelids and tried to think where the binding of the crypt spell would be hidden. Then it came to him.
"How have I forgotten the search spell?" he thought.
Gavin closed his eyes and focused, and a dusting of rusty orange sparkles danced into existence and floated about the room. His heart skipped a beat as the magic was sucked into a book, then shoved back out. Over and over, the magic came up empty. His emotions couldn't take any more, and his fear of failure and what the shadow would do to him threw him into a rage. Gavin's tantrum sent books, scrolls, and reading implements flying around the room. Loud booms and cracks echoed against the outer walls of the secret vault of Srinivasa, and shrieks of agony crested the horizon.
"Queen Ambrosia, what do you want us to do?"
Aaron asked.
"We wait until the commission gets here," Queen Ambrosia said.
Queen Ambrosia's soul was plagued with pain and sorrow as she gazed down from her 60-level skyscraper. Her beloved Srinivasa was under attack, and she knew her time was limited. The peaks of the circling spires that surrounded the main building barely passed her flat. The three moons reflected brilliant strings of haze and illuminated the night. Srinivasa was a group of islands that floated on the Teoran belt, which was raw magic that sprung into the sky like a fountain.
"Our magic defenses are about to fall, and if the Velshari break through, it will be all over."
Aaron's once bright eyes were now pained and wounded.
"They have to hold. We can't let them into the city."
Do you not care? Your people will die, all of them. The Velsharoon has the comet at their disposal. Never in history has anything been able to break our defenses.
Ambrosia turned on her heel and shot him a penetrating glare, and he found her eyes were red and puffy from crying.
Do not proceed to lecture me on caring for my people. I will lay down my life for them. I will take the scrolls of the most importance with me to my death. How dare you accuse me?
Ambrosia's small, slender frame shook with fury, her knuckles clenched white at her sides. The pressure she held as queen of the most powerful city on Ednacht all but overcame her. Aaron stood at attention, his face shadowed from lack of sleep.
I'm sorry.
You are not permitted to speak.
Ambrosia threw her hand across her body in a downward strike. Ambrosia's cheeks burned dark pink, and her long, pale blue robes blew slightly in the wind that came in from the open balcony. Ambrosia's soft slipper shoes kicked her gown into a rhythmic billowing pattern as she paced the floor.
How dare he? Ambrosia said.
Her words were barely audible, and her breath steamed in the coolness of the night. Aaron's chest tightened, and he struggled to breathe, and he went weak in the knees. Sweat crested his shoulder-length brown hair, and he feared he was about to be sent to his death for questioning her. A brisk wind coursed around the room, and a flicker of light cast a shadow as a forest-green wyvern landed on the balcony. The rider dismounted and tossed the reins over its neck, and the wyvern pulled in her massive wings tightly to her side and pawed the smooth surface. The rider pulled off his black riding gloves and slipped them under his belt. His chain armor, under his obsidian body armor, clinked as he moved toward the queen. His square and handsome face framed his deep green eyes. Tears escaped as Ambrosia ran into his arms.
Jerem, what are we going to do?
She buried her tear-stained cheeks into the crease of his shoulder, and he wrapped his arms around her and pulled her tight.
I'm here now with the Rangers, and the Commission has dispatched their troops. I've stationed 6 battalions at each corner of the island, and more on the smaller islands. Medrith and I will take you and Saren to safety.
Ambrosia swallowed a lump in her throat.
No, I must stay here.
But Ambrosia...
Jerem pulled back from her and rested his warm hands on her bare shoulders. The cool of her skin felt good under the heat of his.
No, you must take Saren to the Wyvern Realm where she will be safe.
The queen wiped her eyes with a handkerchief.
You must promise me you will take care of her. Promise, she demanded.
Realization overcame his mind, and his worst fear was now coming true. He was going to lose her forever, and all he could do was nod and whisper.
I will.
Good. Then I will send for the Inner Circle to secure the scrolls. Aaron, send for the mages.
Yes, Your Highness.
Oh, and Aaron?
The hairs on the back of his neck stood as the chills ran down his spine.
I'm sorry for losing my temper.
Aaron nodded and left the room. Ambrosia bit her lip to keep it from quivering and wrung her hands tightly.
Ambrosia, tell me, what happened?
Jerem moved to the long meeting table and pulled out a soft velvet tallback chair and motioned for her to sit. Ambrosia sat down eloquently, resting her intertwined fingers in her lap. She began to explain that the day had started out quiet and non-eventful, but by mid-morning, the alarms had sounded, and Gavin Rill's airships had surrounded the horizon, and the Velsharoon attacked the magical barriers around the city.
Wait, you said they arrived mid-morning? And the shields dropped 50% power by early afternoon? Why did you wait so long to notify me?
Ambrosia's eyes widened as the realization stabbed at her heart.
I thought the mages could handle it.
He gave her hand a gentle squeeze.
Go on.
Jerem sat back in his chair with his arms crossed and his brows scrunched together in the middle of his face as she recited the rest of the events.
They haven't broken the shields yet, and now that you're here, everything will be all right.
Ambrosia's words were more to convince herself than Jerem. She stood and slowly returned to the soft flowing pale blue drapes that danced in the night breeze of the open arched doorway of her balcony. Jerem wanted to grab her and Saren and throw them onto his wyvern's back and race into the wyvern's realm and never come back. He grappled at his emotions and his love for her, and his heart sank. He had known her since they were children and were supposed to get married. But the universe had other plans, and he was forced to love her from a distance. He swallowed the lump in his throat and he scooted his chair out and placed it back under the table. Jerem came up behind her and wrapped his arms around her waist. He leaned into her and kissed the top of her head.
"I must tend to the ranks, but I will return soon."
Ambrosia gripped his arm and squeezed tightly.
"Be careful. You made a promise to me."
She turned in his embrace and her eyes locked onto his. Her eyes were filled with fear, duty, and pain, and he leaned in and kissed her. The sensations coursed through their bodies, and they relished in a moment that might never happen again. Jerem didn't want to release her, and he pulled her tighter. Ambrosia sank into his passion and struggled with her own thoughts of escape. Jerem pulled away and wiped a tear from her pale cheek. She was most exquisite, even after hours of crying, and he wanted to remember absolutely every detail of her face.
"I will. I love you, Ambrosia Svitari of the Travelers."
Ambrosia's heart leapt. Svitari was the surname they would have had if they had married, and Jerem was her one and only love. He released her and forced himself to step back and pulled his gloves out of his belt and slipped them on. The wyvern lowered her body to the ground and he grabbed the reins. Ambrosia flicked her finger and sent a tuft of air to boost him up. He swung his leg over the mighty beast and tightened the reins. The deep green colors of the forest wyvern glinted in the glows of the night as she stretched out her wings and shoved off with her thick hind legs. Jerem soared into the sky, and they met the captain of the air wyverns on the southern edge of the island.
"How is the queen doing?"
Elliot asked.
"She's holding up."
Jerem searched the night sky.
"What are the damages?"
Elliot could tell Jerem's heart was broken. Elliot was his clan brother and understood the love they had had since they were children. Jerem rested one hand over the other on the horn of his saddle, and the clinking of metal straps and belts that the wyverns wore clashed against the motion their wings made as they hovered in the night sky.
"We counted 60 fully loaded airships near the borders. The scouts have reported 3 fleets making good time from the north, and there are 4 fleets coming in from the south."
Elliot shifted his metal helmet and tried to keep the bile from escaping his esophagus.
"We need to take this battle away from the city. Send your fleet south and Oscar's north."
"Sir, when are the Earth Wyverns coming?"
"I'm not sure they are."
"Why not?"
"Torn bridges, I guess. Now get going."
Elliot saluted and yanked the reins. The mighty creature swooped toward his command, and he motioned to his battalion. Hundreds of crystal-white wyverns leapt into the sky. The sheer size of these magnificent creatures was breathtaking, even more so as their scales reflected and shimmered in the twinkling of the lights. Medrith and Jerem swooped in the opposite direction and over the island's lush green jungle. Homes and buildings lived in and under the protection of the jungle floor, along with the glorious white stone of the crystal city walls. The city's force fields were harnessed in large crystals at the top of evenly spaced spires that stood several hundred lengths tall and circled the outer rim of the city.
"Take down these airships."
Jerem hovered over the leader of the dark blue water wyverns.
"Yes, sir,"
Greston grunted.
A sea of blue took to the sky and divided into groups and swarmed the airships. They pulled the elements of water and began flooding the ships. Plumes of steam filled the night sky as the Velsharoon blocked with counterspells of fire to evaporate the water. The water wyverns, however, were stronger, and one by one the ships began to sink. It didn't seem to make much difference, as there were so many, that when one ship fell, another took its place. Jerem flew back toward the city center, making his way to the fire wyverns. The deep red and charcoal-black wyverns waited near the city's main port. Medrith's sharp claws gripped the treetops as she landed.
"What are your orders?" Ada asked.
Ada's long copper-red hair flowed off the back of her head, and her oval face was delicately pointed and garnished with a dusting of ginger freckles on her high cheeks.
"Keep your forces here on Srinivasa."
Ada nodded and shot into the sky. Her platoon had more experience in battle and riding, but they found it hard to keep up with her ferocity. She had more to prove than just being able to lead her people. Gavin Reel murdered her father trying to find the scroll, and she was just plain angry. Medrith released the branches, and the treetops flicked back and forth. But before Jerem could make it more than 100 lengths, a deafening crack scorched the night sky, leaving a scar of brilliant opalite.
shattered crystals tumbled to the ground, and the barrier into the city fell, releasing a flood of red-robed Velshari into the main port. Medra stopped dead in her tracks, rolled her head, flipped upside down, and barreled back toward the open gate. When Jerem reached the north side of the island, he saw Ada's forces engaged with the oncoming attackers.
Shrieks of agony cried out as massive blasts of fire billowed from the guts of the fire wyverns. The sky lit up as though it were noonday, and everything nearby melted and withered. Another deafening crack reverberated across the sky as another crystal shattered. Small bursts of icy white lightning strikes tangled with bursts of bright blood-red bolts sprinkled the horizon. A small ball of flaming gas in the distant horizon appeared to grow a little bigger, and Jerem tried to deny the pulsing knot growing in his stomach.
"The Comet of Zeriandai, the Goddess of Destruction," Medris said.
"I guess it's true then," Jerem said.
"The Commission is here on the eastern shores," Medris said.
Medris stretched out her long neck, and Jerem laid close to her as she beat her wings toward the eastern shore. When they reached the shore, they descended like a falling stone. Medris pulled up at the last second and sat down without even a thud. Jerem dismounted and ran through the sand and waited as the enormous airships slipped onto the fading sandy shores. Half-lowered planks plunged into the soft, moist grit upon reaching the shore. A stocky brute of a man scaled the long plank and made his way to Jerem.
"Jerem, what are the damages?" Trendle barked.
"We have lost two of the towers."
He gripped the short, stocky brute of a man tightly at the forearm.
"We need to evacuate the city and secure the inner buildings," Jerem said.
The clanking and banging of swords, spears, and armor overpowered the distant sounds of agony. Hordes of men in rows of fours rushed from the ship's cargo bays and filled the shores with men standing at attention awaiting orders.
"Yes, sir,"
Trendle said. Trendle banged his hand on his chest and turned, leading with his head, and briskly reached the front line. The commission was divided into ranks of archers, spears and swordsmen, and elemental mages. Trendle barked out his orders, and with an enormous shout, the commission broke up, each group making their way to their destinations.
"Jerem, we saw a battle already in action. Why are we just now evacuating the city? Shouldn't we have done that sooner?"
Trendle asked. His voice was confused and hurt.
"The rangers arrived not long ago. The mages thought they could handle it."
"I see."
"This is going to be a very difficult battle."
"Why do you say that?"
"The Zeriandai Comet is coming."
Trendle's head lowered.
"Well then, we fight to the death."
"With honor, brother."
"With honor."
Trendle gripped Jerem's forearm tightly, then joined his men in the barrage of oncoming Velshari. Ada moved to the sky as the commission took over the land battle. She turned her attention to the oncoming airships and joined her 2nd battalion. A group of Velshari yelped as large vines wrapped around their bodies and swallowed them into the ground. Jerem had commanded the foliage around the inner buildings to devour the Velshari. The sun's first rays broke through and danced on the heavy smoke that filled the sky. Bursts of flames erupted around the island, and rain and windstorms chased fiery lightning strikes into the sky. The outer perimeter sections of brilliant white stone walls now sat in rubble. Storms of arrows went buzzing and fizzing into the sky, and metal boots slogged between the slippery sludge of fallen comrades. Swords swooshed and clanked as they met other swords. The closer the comet came, the stronger the Velshari became, making it harder for the commission. Chaos and confusion surged the city. A sea of red cloaks engulfed every road and alleyway, throwing magic and swinging swords at everything that moved. The white stone was now stained red and smeared with the black shadows of what used to be men.
"Fall back and send a squad to the city center. Set up blockades,"
Trendle called. Amid the clouds that hung over the island, Trendle saw the comet barreling toward them with a shield of fiery damnation. His heart sank into his stomach, and a tightening in his chest practically took his breath. He swooped his sword upward and blocked a dart of lightning aimed directly at his chest. Ambrosia gritted her teeth.
"There's more than one person that can use the power of the comet."
"What are you going to do?"
Aaron asked.
"Sink the island and destroy Srinivasa."
Ambrosia walked sternly toward her deep oak desk, and Aaron's stomach lurched inside him as the words hit his mind.
"How? Why?"
"With this."
Ambrosia pulled out a long parchment that was rolled tightly.
"The incantation of Undin," she said, fingering the edge.
"And how will sinking the island stop Gavin Rill?"
It's the only way to destroy the Turin Belt, she said, dropping one end.
But that would kill everyone on the island, and the earth below.
Yes, and that is the tragedy that Gavin Rill has brought upon us. She slammed her fist into the hardened wood of her desk, and Aaron stifled the shock that was surpassing his emotions. Trust me, I have racked my brain for rotations for another way, but there isn't. I don't want to do this any more than you or anyone else. Her voice was shaky, and she trembled with the daunting task before her.
What if we...
Aaron, there is no other way. Besides, even if there was, Gavin will torture every living thing until he finds it. This way, he will believe it is buried in the center of the planet.
Her tone was full of defeat, and he understood that she indeed had been searching for another way, and he could now see the despair in her eyes. Ambrosia had not quite accepted her fate, and the understanding of not being able to raise her child and see her grow into a woman, to never be with Jerem again, and her wonderful counsel and all her loved ones ate at her emotions. It was almost too much for her to bear.
What shall I tell the armies?
That it's time, and send Jerem.
Aaron bowed. His once childlike eyes were now glazed over. Ambrosia studied the scroll once more, and sat it on the desk, and walked to the edge of the balcony. One hand on the cold stone, and the other gripped her blue sapphire stone necklace. Her gold and teal blue robe draped gently over her tired body, and her delicately woven crown sat on her pounding head. The anguished cries of her people now sat on numb ears. A small pink hand gripped the lower half of her robes. With the innocence of young age, a small girl gazed up.
Mommy, what's happening? Saren asked. Oh, my dear little one.
The queen picked up her little girl and buried her little girl's teary face into her shoulder.
Shh, shh, shh,
Ambrosia whispered. Ambrosia didn't see Jerem walk briskly up behind her. His clashing and clanking were hidden under the booms and crashes from the distance.
Ambrosia, you sent for me?
Jerem found the little princess in her arms, and his heart pounded against his ribs. He swallowed hard, shoving the bile back into his stomach.
It's time.
She could hardly see his bruised face amidst the heavy shield of her own tears.
Is there any other way?
There is no other way.
Jerem didn't want to accept the answer, but had no choice.
All right.
Jerem slipped his arm around her waist and pulled her into his embrace. Her long blonde hair tickled his skin. He put his hand on the side of her face and leaned in. He stared into her eyes, and slowly and thoughtfully, he kissed her.
I love you. I always have, and I always will.
I love you too. I have to tell you something.
She looked at Saren, then back to Jerem.
Saren is yours, not Michael's.
Jerem pulled back and studied Ambrosia's soft blue eyes. His heart swelled, and he smiled his intoxicating grin.
You're not mad? I'm sorry I never told you.
Nor should you have. You were about to become queen, and that would have complicated things.
Mommy, I'm scared, the princess said.
The tiny voice was shaky, and she played nervously with her mother's hair. Ambrosia studied her daughter's face one last time.
You go with your father.
Where?
Into the sky with the flyers, all right?
Ambrosia's cool lips touched Saren's warm cheek, and she gave her the last kiss she would ever give her.
But when will I see you again?
The queen gave Saren to Jerem, and he wrapped her in her blanket. Sobs escaped, as Ambrosia's resolve was falling apart.
Go, take her to the wyverns and never come back, Ambrosia managed.
With tears streaming down his face, Jerem bowed and leapt off the stone-carved terrace and onto Medra's back. Ambrosia sent a furling burst of air under the wyvern, throwing them into the sky above. Medrith pulled in her wings and shot into the sky like an arrow. To fight a war was one thing, but to give up one's own flesh and blood is another, and she gripped the handrail for support. She watched the green dot disappear, then threw up her arms. Ambrosia called upon the powers of the Turin Belt and began to recite the incantation. Gavin's calculated plan turned to a frenzy of rash thoughts and feelings. Everywhere he searched, he couldn't find the scroll. Even with his search spell, it continued to elude him. He pulled and shoved every book and piece of parchment out of the way, and he hurled a massive spell around the room. Glittering strands of text danced and swayed around him, and one by one disappeared. The words he longed for were not found. The only words present were those left by the Grand Cleric.
Gavin Rill,
You will never have this scroll as I have destroyed it once and for all. If you continue your quest, you will be met with certain death forever. Did you think that you were the only one that could use the comet's power? Grand Cleric Matthew.
Gavin was shocked out of his delirium with the sudden shift and sensation of falling, and he ran to the window. Clouds of dust and smoke began to rise, and he slammed his fists on the stone wall.
She's sinking the city, he yelled.
He threw out his arms and sucked himself into the air. The sudden force blew out all the light in the room as he vanished. Gavin conjured a windstorm that careened through the city and wiped out everything in its path. Debris floated upward as the ground fell out from under it. The comet's power helped Queen Ambrosia stand perfectly still while chanting. Even as the island fell, she was as firm as she had been at first. The last words she uttered were that only a blood heir could enter the secrets of the Forgotten City. The Teoran fountain fell into the center of the ground below, and the islands plummeted into a new existence. Enormous rock walls encompassed the fallen earth, covering everything under hundreds of lengths of ground. It left but a few of the spires that were still intact, standing as a reminder of what the glorious city once was.